I wish people knew more holistically how connected their local breweries were to their local communities. We have people who know that because they've been in there and they see what these breweries do. But when you're buying beer from a local brewery, you're not just getting a great product. You're supporting a local business that is reinvesting in their community. And they're doing that in a variety of different ways based on who their company is and how they buy. But I think when people really understand that local breweries make not just great beer, but they're great businesses and they support their local communities, that's really where you get customers who want to be with that brewery for life.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Bart Watson, President and CEO of the Brewers Association. Bart, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Bart, tell us about the Brewers Association.
Yeah, the Brewers Association is the national not-for-profit trade association for America's small and independent craft brewers. So we're a trade association, a business association that represents brewery members. We have about 5,000 brewery members spread all across the country. And that's a little bit more than 50% of the more than 9,000 breweries that exist in the United States.
Bart, I have friends who are mad for craft beer, and they make big efforts to visit breweries all over the country. Is the craft beer movement growing? Is it steady? Like, what's the trend?
Well, first, it sounds like you have a lot of smart friends. Everyone should support their local breweries. But it's not one that's necessarily growing by leaps and bounds. You know, what we saw over the kind of history was crafts had various eras of growth, first in the 80s and 90s, and then we had a slowdown in the 90s and 2000s. And then we saw a decade of growth in kind of the mid-2000s through the mid-2010s, where there was really just an explosion in national breweries, in their market share. And, you know, what we see today is a little bit more of what we're calling a mature market. So it's not a collapse in the market, but the brewery number is slightly going down. We saw slightly more closings than openings last year in the United States. And in general, demand has become more stable. So the market isn't growing quite the way it once was. And we're actually measuring slight declines in craft beer sales, which track pretty similarly to overall beverage alcohol sales, which have been down the last couple of years.
Boy, we're fickle consumers, aren't we?
We are. It's amazing. And long time we've been talking about, you know, how much of this is a trend versus a fad. And the good news is this is a stable market that isn't going anywhere. But our members are certainly facing new headwinds that they weren't 5 or 10 years ago when many of them got into the space. And that's part of our role as an association is to help them navigate that.
Bart, you've got an interesting origin story to the association. Tell us about that, because I think you're the merger of two associations.
Yeah, the Brewers Association is the merger of two beer associations, the Brewers Association of America and the Association of Brewers. The first, both small brewer orgs, but the first was formed in World War II when brewers needed materials that were getting consumed by the war effort. So the primary one was tin for their bottle caps. And then the second association, the Association of Brewers, was an offshoot of the American Homebrewers Association. So to shorten a very long story, in the late 1970s, one of our founders, Charlie Papazian, founded the American Homebrewers Association, his garage in 1978. And those homebrewers that he inspired all over the country eventually wanted to go pro. And so he created an association to help their fledgling breweries grow and thrive. And at a certain point, those breweries had gotten so successful that it made sense for the existing Small Brewers Association to merge with them. And that led to the Brewers Association, which is who we are today.
Wow. Now, the American Homebrewers Association just spun off from the Brewers Association. What was that like? And why does one part of the association decide to leave?
Yeah, this was very much a mutual parting of ways where the American Homebrewers Association, which is part of our DNA and part of the DNA of craft brewing, wanted to really take itself in a new direction. They wanted to do things that as a professional association, maybe we weren't comfortable doing or investing in. They wanted to get back to their scrappy homebrewing roots and do things a little bit differently. And at a certain point, it became clear that it was best for both associations to part ways. For them, it allowed freedom, it allowed flexibility, and really to chart their own path. And for us, it meant that we weren't having to make investments that maybe as a professional association, we weren't as excited about. So we're super excited to support them on that transition, to set them up with what we hope is a great stable funding source, and then to help advise them as they do that and then watch them go on their path. So excited to see where the American Homebrewers Association goes and how successful they can be.
Well, I had their executive director on a few months ago. I will put a link in the show notes. That was interesting to hear their story of, you know, deciding to go out on their own and kind of the journey ahead. Now, Bart, you said that craft beer maybe isn't exploding the way it had been maybe during the 90s, but there's always something new in every industry and profession. So what's new in craft beer?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges for craft brewing in general is that in beverage alcohol, there is always something new. There's always innovation. And when craft beer was really at its growth peak, it was pretty much the source of flavor and variety in beverage alcohol. And, you know, I'm drawing with a pretty broad brush here, but one of the things craft brewing offered the beer market that we didn't have in the United States was a lot of flavor, a lot of variety, and delivering it locally, these small local businesses. And, you know, this was a beer market where if you look at the late 1970s, early 1980s, beer pretty much came in two flavors, American lager and American light lager.
Ah.
You know, our members were really the ones who turned that around. And now when you walk into pretty much every bar or restaurant, there's going to be a variety of flavors of beer on tap. Now, the challenge our members face today is you can find flavor and variety almost everywhere in beverage alcohol. We have what are called flavor malt beverages. We have ready-to-drink canned cocktails. We have hard insert almost any beverage, and you can find a hard version of it these days, hard lemonades, hard kombuchas. So we have a lot of innovation from a lot of different places. We also have other things that are creeping into the beverage alcohol aisle that aren't necessarily beverage alcohol, things like hemp-derived THC beverages. So there's a lot that's going on in beverage all the time. Much of it creeps into beverage alcohol. And our members are having to navigate a landscape where craft beer isn't necessarily growing, but their shelf sets, their tap handles are under threat from a whole bunch of different things.
All right. Well, it sounds like we got a lot to talk about when it comes to the Brewers Association and how you're supporting your members during this transition. But I want to turn to your journey. So how'd you get to become president and CEO of the Brewers Association?
Yeah, this is certainly not a seat I expected to find myself in. If you go back in my career, I was an academic. I got a PhD in political science, actually, at the University of California, Berkeley, and then taught for a couple of years, a mixture of economics. I've always done political economy things. So a mixture of economics and political science, first at UC Berkeley and then at the University of Iowa. And while at the University of Iowa, I was teaching a health policy class and doing a lecture on excise taxes and how they're really more of a public policy than a health policy. And came across the Brewers Association website, and they were a source of some of the excise tax information I was getting. But then they also had an economist position, which I was intrigued about. And being a young career academic, still very open to new opportunities, I decided to apply on a lark. I'm pretty sure it's the only non-academic job I ever applied for. And they took my application, considered it, and got it.
You got it. Wow.
And even then, I was still a little bit split on whether I wanted to make this jump into a trade association and outside of academia. And my wife, who clearly is much smarter than me, said, "It's beer. It's Boulder. We should do it. You'll love it." And she was right. Then I spent roughly a dozen years as the chief economist at the Brewers Association. So that was the role I was hired at, actually staff economist originally. But increasingly over that time period, too, I took on management of various parts of the organization, led our membership team. I like to joke I was the membership guru because I didn't actually do much day to day. We built a great membership team who really did a lot of the nuts and bolts. And so I was there more for strategic advice, and then increasingly took on a strategic role, helping our senior management team with various projects or thinking about the direction of the organization. And last year, our CEO, longtime CEO, decided it was time for him to move on, time for him to retire. So I threw my hat in the ring, and here I am today.
Bart, every new CEO that I have on the podcast says that they thought they knew the job of the CEO, but once they got into the position, they realized, whoa, this is a totally different mindset. What's it been like?
Yeah, I think that's true, that there were definitely things I didn't anticipate. And I won't go as far as to say it was totally different. There was a lot of it that I knew. I had already been going to our board meetings, so I understood, you know, board management was going to be a piece of it and working with the board. And, you know, I think the things that I didn't understand were going to suck up as much of my time were HR, culture, and just the people side of our business. We have slightly less than 50 staff, and I'm amazed how much time and effort I've spent. And I think it's mostly very usefully spent thinking about our culture here, thinking about staffing decisions and, you know, how we structure our organization. And so a lot less time spent on that grand strategy that I thought I would be spending more of my time day to day on, and more on internal operations and people stuff. But yeah, certainly that there's been a learning curve.
Yeah, I also hear from new CEOs that even though they were attending board meetings, that they didn't realize how much of their time now goes into board relations. How's that going?
I think it's going well. You know, all boards are unique, and our board is, I think, especially unique because we have different member classes. So we have board members of very different sizes and perspectives on how they view the industry. But I had been going to board meetings long enough, I'd already developed some of those relationships. I think it's one of the things that helped give me a leg up as a candidate, that I knew the board, knew what they were looking for. But, you know, certainly there's even more of that, right? And, you know, working with our executive committee more closely, really thinking about running those board meetings as opposed to participating in those board meetings, you realize how much more time it takes to do that and to do that well,
right?
To really set up the strategic discussions in a way that they're productive and you're not just given updates. So that's certainly been part of the learning curve. And it's one of those things I'm sure I'm going to continue to get better on every day I'm in this job.
Well, let's turn to the Brewers Association. So I was on your website, and then I got sent to craftbeer.com, and then I learned about the Great American Beer Festival, and I know you've got a big convention. Maybe we start with the fact that you've got this kind of B2C component to the work that you do that's maybe different from some other trade associations, because you've got this website called craftbeer.com that does target consumers. So why do that?
Yeah, I think this is really rooted in where the association started. And part of what the challenge was for these small businesses that we serve in the early days was educating consumers about their beer and how it was different. You know, you would have consumers who would see a porter or a pale ale that was not the normal color they expected beer to be and wonder if it was safe to drink. So we had issues early on with just really basic consumer education around what craft beer was, what these beer styles were that many craft brewers were brewing. And that evolved over the years to more promotion efforts. So one of the things, and I think any trade association does, but we certainly think about here, is what can we do for our members they can't do for themselves? And many of our members are very small and locally focused. They don't have marketing budgets. They maybe have social channels where they're pushing out offerings or talking to their customers on their Facebook page, but they're not thinking about promoting the category or their products more broadly. And so we've stepped in over the years to fill some of that and do more of that consumer education, highlighting elevation of beer. For years, we were doing, you know, fancy beer media dinners, beer and food pairing, and running consumer events. So we run the Great American Beer Festival, which is the largest ticketed beer festival in the United States. It's been going for more than 40 years. It's in Denver every year. It's going to bring tens of thousands of beer lovers, mostly from Colorado, but from all over the country and all over the world to Denver.
Wow.
Hundreds of breweries, food, music. We've really focused on the festival aspect in recent years to keep it experiential. And I think that's pretty unique. You don't talk to a lot of trade associations that are running, you know, five-figure number of attendance consumer festivals, but that's something that we've been doing since the early days of the association.
Bart, this outreach to the consumers, how important is that as a member benefit to your members?
I think it's important. And actually, it's one of those things I think we stopped thinking of as quite as important a few years ago. Craft beer was in the mainstream. It was growing like crazy. Our members were telling their own stories in thousands of localities all across the country. And one of the things we've come to realize in the last couple of years is that it's still very important that we maybe need to get back more to that consumer education. You get new 21 plus drinkers every day, and it's very easy to remember that they're not going to have the same knowledge that the current generation of craft beer drinkers has. So it's actually one thing that our board has directed us to think about more in recent years, to lean back in. And even that can seem counterintuitive in a time when craft beer seems somewhat ubiquitous, But I think one of the things we're going to try to recommit to is how do we promote beer? How do we promote the category? And how do we get back to some of that consumer education that really helped us build the category and differentiate our members and their beers from a lot of what was out there?
Well, let's turn to what you're doing for your members. So you've got a big convention and show. Tell us about that. And what's new with the convention and show?
Yeah, the Craft Brewers Conference and Brew Expo America is the largest brewing convention in the United States. Rotates around the country. So we're going to be in Philadelphia in 2026. Really excited to be back there. And with all of the tie-ins for 250 years to be in Philadelphia, I think is a really special location. So we as an association representing small and independent brewers are going to use that too to lead in on our independence message and why independent breweries are
very nice.
Very important. Yes, worked out very well. I'd like to pretend we planned it that way. More of a coincidence than anything. And, you know, it's a large show. It's seen some of the headwinds that I think all in-person events have faced over the years, but really has a couple of components, a big expo where you can find anything you need to run a brewery. Always amazing to see them set up and see all of the equipment and the canning lines and the things that move kegs and big trucks and all that. And then we have an education piece, which is certainly evolving as our members look to become more total beverage businesses as well. We're investing, I think, both in trying to help members run better businesses. So it's not just about the beer, but about their business itself, and also helping them navigate the landscape we already talked about in terms of, you know, a more complex beverage environment. And then, you know, we think of the show in four buckets. So I've already talked about two: commerce, education, networking. And we're really trying to think more consciously around how we can create networking opportunities of like-sized roles, of like-sized businesses. So we're putting a lot of conscious thought into meetups, into other structured ways that people, this is a big event now, you know, we're maybe expecting 8,000-ish people. At its peak, it was about 14,000. So we're thinking about how we can create structured networking. And then the final bucket is just fun. Beer is a celebratory beverage. We need to make sure this is something that people enjoy coming to. And so we're investing in entertainment and thinking about that welcome reception in new ways, but making sure that it's a memorable experience and that people enjoy their time there.
Oh my God, it sounds amazing. We'll put a link in the show notes to the Great American Beer Festival, to craftbeer.com, as well as your convention. Well, let's turn to something different. So you talked about how you're trying to help your members kind of navigate this landscape, changing consumer tastes, but you've also got a government affairs function. And I was cruising that section of the website before our interview, and tariffs seem to keep coming up. So what's the landscape like these days, and how are tariffs affecting your members?
When we think about the challenges our members face right now, I think there's really two big buckets. One is around demand and driving traffic to their businesses or to the shelves where they sell their beer. And we're doing that more on the consumer side and the promote side. And then the second is rising costs. Breweries have been faced with rising costs in the post-COVID period, as a lot of businesses have. Pretty much everything that goes into beer got more expensive in the last 5 years. And our members are less able to deal with that than brewers with a lot more scale. In general, they're going to be on shorter-term contracts. If they're on contracts at all, they're not going to have the market power to push back on pricing increases. They're not going to own pieces of their supply chain. So they're going to be looking at what's available out in the market as opposed to growing their own hops or controlling their own can manufacturing. So tariffs have been an additional challenge on top of this. And in tariffs, you know, we tried to focus in immediately on where are the places that our members are the most exposed, and then what can we do to tell their story to an administration that I think genuinely wants to help small American manufacturers. And so we can be a part of the story they want to tell if they understand the challenges that our members have. And so that's really focused primarily around aluminum and the 232 tariffs that have raised the cost of cans for our members. You know, can sheet aluminum goes up, can sheet goes up, aluminum cans goes up. And that's something our members, again, really have no control over. They're mostly buying American cans from American can manufacturers who buy American can sheet. But if that raw aluminum goes up in price, it's going to affect their downstream impact. So we've worked very hard to work with the administration, to work with other partners up and down the supply chain, Aluminum Association, Can Manufacturers Institute, to tell that story. And then we're keeping our eyes on other places where they have risk and where they're exposed, one being barley. And we're certainly going to be telling the story of why we have an integrated North American barley chain as the USMCA gets looked at more. So very active in DC. I'm earning my frequent flyer miles this year, getting back and forth there, and, you know, excited always to tell the story of our members and hopefully help them navigate this.
Bart, do we import barley and hops and all that?
We import a lot of barley, less hops. So yeah, we grow plenty of hops here in the United States in the Pacific Northwest. Yakima Valley in Washington, and then, you know, valleys in Idaho and Oregon. U.S. is one of the two leading hop growers in the world. So that's a place where a lot of members do use specialty hops from other parts of the world and are seeing increases in hops from Australia, New Zealand, from Europe. But that's not necessarily something they have to have, or we think we can have as much direct control over. Barley is a different story. We very much have a North American barley system where even if you're buying malt from the United States, it might come from barley from Canada. And there's a whole variety of reasons why this has happened over the years. Crops have moved north. American farmers have at times preferred other crops due to crop subsidies or other reasons. But we're certainly trying to tell the story of maybe we could grow more barley in the United States, but this isn't a quick or easy fix. If anything, after the tariffs were announced, U.S. barley planting went down last year. So barley farmers aren't reacting to this by suddenly planting more barley in the United States. And craft brewers are uniquely exposed to this. Large brewers are more likely to have those contracts with large American barley growers. And so craft brewers, again, are going to be buying where they can get supply from. And for many of them, that's from Canada. And we want to make sure the administration understands that story and understands that if they want to help American manufacturers, they need to create plans and a bridge for those American manufacturers to have all of their inputs grown here in America.
Wow, Bart, I appreciate that so much. I think that when you read the news and you hear about the tariffs, it becomes an abstraction. And the numbers are so big and it's so overarching. And then you hear about the local brewer who just had his barley supply, you know, the price increased three times. Then you start to really think about the impact. Wow.
Yeah. And to be clear, right now, luckily, barley is exempt. The USMCA does cover barley, and so it's exempt. But if that were to change, it would put breweries out of business almost overnight. I don't think I've ever had my phone ring more than the day that they first announced the Canadian tariffs and people were trying to figure that out. So right now, our role is simply to talk about how that exemption under USMCA is a good thing. And any future negotiations need to ensure that that stays in place.
Yeah. Well, let's turn to something related. The website has a huge section on data and statistics. You collect national stats, state stats, you've got benchmarking data, you've got analysis, you've got insights. Couldn't see much of it because it was members only, but I know it's there. Why are you all collecting this data? Why is it important? And I guess that's how you got hired in the first place.
Yeah, so I think it's particularly important since it got me a job and got me where I am today. I put this in the overall bucket of what we think about what we can do. What can we do for our members that they can't do themselves? Your local brew pub doesn't have the resources to invest in market insights, to think about how the consumer is changing. We do a nationally representative consumer survey of craft drinkers and run them through a whole bunch of what they're thinking about and what they're buying. Most of our members certainly cannot go out and collect trend data or buy the supermarket scan data that we have the ability to. So we've really seen that as a competitive advantage that we can deliver to our members to help them on equal footing with companies that have legions of people who do this. You know, large breweries are going to be investing incredible amounts of money in market and consumer insights. So this helps us level the playing field for a member who wants to understand what's going on in the marketplace, wants to be nimble, but doesn't have the resources to invest in this. And I think this has been one of our most popular offerings over the years. It's something that even as we've had a tighter budget, you know, we've continued to invest in because we hear from members all the time that the stats and data is what helped them put together their initial business plan and what helps them make business decisions today as they navigate the marketplace.
We're heading into October, Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
What do you wish people knew about craft beer and what should they be trying?
I wish people knew more holistically how connected their local breweries were to their local communities. We have people who know that because they've been in there and they see what these breweries do. But when you're buying beer from a local brewery, you're not just getting a great product. You're supporting a local business that is reinvesting in their community. And they're doing that in a variety of different ways based on who their company is and how they buy. But I think when people really understand that local breweries make not just great beer, but they're great businesses and they support their local communities, that's really where you get customers who want to be with that brewery for life. So that's one. And in terms of beer, what should people be drinking? I mean, you've already nailed one of them. This is a great time of year for those German lager style beers, Märzens, Fest beers, but also point out to one of my personal favorites, which are fresh hop beers, not necessarily available everywhere, but this is hop harvest. Beer is an agricultural product, and there's only one time of year you can get those freshly picked hops made into beers, normally IPAs. So if you see a fresh hop beer on tap at your local brewery. Check it out. I guarantee you won't be disappointed.
I'm going to check it out. My husband is a big IPA guy.
Yeah. Fresh hop IPAs. Those are the best.
Bart, this has been a really fun interview. We'll have to have you back and you can tell us how you've been navigating all this craziness.
Yeah, certainly happy to come back and talk about change management, AI, whatever. We're going through all the changes that I'm sure many of your association partners are and excited to learn more and lean in.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.